Welcome, everybody, to Capes and Scales West.
West.
Issue 6. So here we are. How's everyone doing?
I'm doing pretty good.
Yeah?
I'm excellent. I feel great.
Nice. I love all these excellence. This is awesome. Yeah.
How do you feel?
What do you mean, how do I feel? I feel empty inside.
Well, I think that's pretty good.
That's
I have no questions about that at all, so...
No, I feel fine. It's just a lot on my mind. This big move to Denver and trying to figure out my life. And I got an extension to my job, which is good.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, just for a couple months, though. But, you know, that's pretty much the big stuff right now. Just a lot of stuff on my mind. That's fine. So we'll see how it goes. Funny story, and then we can move on to other things. I was at work the other day. So one of the people I work with used to be my professor at the university.
Okay, that's okay. Cool.
And I've been at the organization longer than he has, but he has a higher up position, but there's some seniority. But nonetheless, I have him on like a pretty high pedestal because he's my professor. Mm-hmm. So we were talking yesterday, and he was like, yeah, I don't like to hear my own voice. And I'm like, oh, I love my own voice. I was like, I have a podcast. He's like, oh, really? Can I take a look at it? I'm like, yeah, sure. So here's the setup. He's about to go into like an in-depth scientific review over this thing that he's done. And as a quick aside, let's go take a look at Caves and Scowls, right?
Okay.
And so I'm like, all right, so we go to Caves and Scowls. And I like kind of turn and do something different because I'm not thinking anything about what he's going to find. And in my ear, all I hear is him say, oh, paranoia, fear, and vagina. And I was like, what? What did you just say? Because that's the title of one of the Capes and Scowls on the East Coast. That's one of their titles. And so he was looking at the feed, and he just saw that title. He was like, oh, I must be in the right place. And there's something about your professor that you work with that you put on a high pedestal saying the word vagina out loud. That was very hilarious and awkward, and I don't know how to feel about it on the inside.
That's hilarious.
Maybe I got kind of like desensitized to that when I studied like queer feminist theory in college. Really intelligent professors talking ad nauseum about vaginas.
So maybe that's what it is. We didn't talk enough about vaginas in school, but
I mean, I don't really know how that would come up in like, you know, environmental. Like sciences.
I'm sure biology. And I guess, but I don't think we. Yeah. So yeah.
Okay.
It was interesting. It was fun. It would be like if your mom, like, oh yeah, let me check out your Capes and Scowls. Like, oh, paranoia, fear, and vagina. What is this? Like, you would just be weirded out for a second.
Oh yeah, I think there's this weird. So I went to art school, and the nude models. You know,
yeah.
It's sort of. let's just get into it.
Nude models. End of that.
There's a bit that you want to not perceive them as being
sexual,
like, and yes, sexual or normal person. Like, oh, okay, you're literally
just
deciding.
A piece of meat.
I do. There's no like correct words to say.
I didn't want
to
say that, but
you don't want to have a conversation with the model. You're like, so it's like the same thing.
You're not human. I won't talk to you.
Hey,
you're obviously a replicant.
Are you
God,
cold?
This is going down a deep well.
are you cold today?
Man.
No, I went to, that happened to me once. I didn't see the first Harold and Kumar movie.
Okay.
And I went to go see the second one in theaters with my mom. And because I was like, it's funny, it'll be like, you know, a stoner comedy. It'll
right.
Be like, haha, whatever. And then, no. There's like a whole, I don't know if you've seen it, but there's a whole scene in it where they go to this guy's house and he's like, instead of having a topless party, I wanted to have a bottomless party. Uh-oh. And so, everyone, and it does not hold back.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's hilarious.
So, I feel like everybody needs to have at least one moment like that with their
someone.
Mom, probably. So
maybe it'd be fine with my mom would be cool with that. It wouldn't be a problem.
Or a professor. Or somebody, professor. Or somebody that
or
you like.
Your art model.
Or your art model. Yeah. Somebody in life that you don't want to have that conversation with.
Exactly.
And then you're forced into a situation where you have that conversation.
I really want the nude art model to do the thing. You do the painting. You go to get coffee. And they just walk up next to you to get coffee. And they're still nude.
Like a nudist colony. And that's just like their whole thing.
I was about to say, like, yeah, that's fine. You know, and then added that they're still nude.
They're still nude.
Yeah.
Or like, where do you keep your wallet?
Or like, what would happen if you like, or if you go to like the restaurant and you're like getting food and your waiter comes up and it's the nude model, like from earlier?
It would be fine. Yeah. It's like in that specific instance that it's like, it's work. And so you end up, you don't want to relate in that sense. Like, I don't want to have a conversation. I'm seriously.
What if you're like, I need a water right now because I'm parched.
Oh, that's fine. That's
give
why
them
it's
water,
still, like, work
and then you
related.
Go over to their naked body and give them water. You'd be okay with it.
I suppose. It's ironic. That never happened.
Mm-hmm.
Really? I mean, we had 4-hour classes, so it would be like usually
really?
An hour pose.
Thirsty. Oh, okay.
And then, you know, they would take a break, come back.
I was about to say, man, they're professionals if they sit there for 4 hours and just naked, just, you know, in a pose.
Yeah.
I did a pose, but then I realized this is radio, so
no one saw you.
It was for both of y'all's benefit.
We appreciate it.
He was channeling a little bit of a Titanic right there. Like, yeah. Dropping right into it. God, I didn't think we had this much space in that room for you to do that. So.
Yeah, well, I mean, the table does kind of resemble a broken door, so.
anyway.
All right, okay. So news. So, yeah, so are there things going on?
Did you watch Game of Thrones?
Yes.
Is a new season out?
Yeah, new season started on
just
Sunday.
Started the first episode.
Was it worth the hype
of
waiting?
Sunday.
Okay, so I'm going to have a different perspective, I imagine, on this. I've never watched Game of Thrones episodically. So, you know, it's always been binge watching.
Okay.
So I don't want to make anyone angry.
Mm-hmm.
I loved it. I thought it was a great episode. When it ended, I went, huh. That's it?
Yeah. No, it's true. Like, since there's so... It's one of those shows, like, since there's so many characters and there's so many different, like, in-depth subplots going on, there's really not a whole lot happening in each episode.
Yeah.
Like, for sure. It's kind of like Sense8 and a deal.
Yeah.
Like, if you try to describe what's happening in one episode,
right.
You're like, wow, that sounds like the slowest, most boring show ever. And, like... Game of Thrones season 1-2, there's like probably, you know, 5 minutes of each character.
Yeah.
And there's really not a whole lot going on. They're like, oh, Sam found a book.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Arya's riding a horse. And Daenerys is on boats, and now she's not on boats.
And she touches sand.
She touches sand.
And it's important that she touches the sand.
And Cersei's having a painting done.
That was beautiful.
Yeah,
by
it
the
was.
Way. The new thing that I want in one of a like future house is to just have a war room with with the entire globe painted on the floor.
That would be amazing.
I think it should. Wonderful.
Yeah,
it was
really
beautiful.
Cool.
My wife was like,
"What you should do is
wow.
you should have each room have different worlds on it. Like your living room could have the earth, and then like you could have a bedroom with like Westeros, and then like
oh
another room
gosh,
with like
that
Middle
sounds
earth.
Amazing."
And then, like, a third room with Pan Am, or, like, you know, one with,
I can
like,
do without Pan Am, but that's fine.
Whatever. I'm just throwing out sci-fi worlds here.
Oh, the whole world of Avatar!
Yeah! You can have the Avatar map, and, like...
Avatar the Last Airbender.
Yes. Blue Arrow.
Right.
Blue Arrow, not Blue People.
Blue Arrow, not Blue People.
Yeah.
Love it.
That's awesome.
Okay, so, yeah, but... I was kind of thinking, like, Game of Thrones, like, the new episode, I was like, everyone's like, oh, who do you think is gonna die? Who do you think is gonna die? Who do you think is gonna die? And half of me was like, maybe nobody's gonna die just because the creators love building up expectations for one of the ways and then, like, not doing it.
Yeah.
And the first, like, 3 minutes of that episode was like, nope. everyone dies.
Yeah.
So, spoilers, everyone dies. Literally, everybody dies. There's just a meteor that strikes the whole planet, and it's just it's over. End of the show.
Yeah. And that's why I said it's pretty uneventful. One thing happens, and then it's like, and I enjoyed the one thing that was just...
Which was a meteor.
Yeah. It is funny, though, like, thinking about a show like that, where when you describe a singular episode, it is as if nothing happened. But it's such a show that it lends itself really well to binge watching. So you think about each individual episode is three episodes, really, is what you're sort of talking about at once. And so much happens with three things combined.
Yeah.
Because usually, like, typically in television, each episode will have, like, a standard plot arc going for it, too. But since Game of Thrones is so much going on, it's really, like, the whole season has a plot arc that fits into the bigger plot arc of the show, and each episode really doesn't have the full, like, you know, build, conflict, rising action, falling action kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, you're just like, yeah, they're, you know, just chilling out, Ed Sheeran singing a song.
Yeah, yeah.
For some reason.
Oh, yeah, I heard about that.
Yeah.
But I don't know anything about it, so...
He's got a beautiful voice. I like it. Yeah. And he's kind of weird looking.
I don't even know what he looks like. I was going to say, I don't know what he looks like, but...
He's like kind of like an average dude.
Yeah.
He's like really ginger.
Yeah.
That's what... I didn't recognize him, and my friend I was watching it with, she was like, oh my god, that's Ed Sheeran. And I'm like... The like
the regular, random guy in the background.
Guy. The dude who looks like
Harry
Potter guy.
He looks like
Like Ron. He looks
Ron.
Like
yeah, that's true.
That's interesting.
Yeah, he looks like a redheaded hobbit kind of.
Huh.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah.
Is he human?
Yeah, he was
there was in Game of Thrones, he's just a
okay.
Oh yeah, there's just like knights sitting.
No, I mean in real life. I was like,
no. we did just watch the trailer for Bright, so just like clarification there.
He is actually an orc in real life. Not that that would matter.
I don't understand how that would ever listen to him ever again.
So do we want to roll then into that?
Yeah,
let's talk about some trailers.
Let's get into trailers. Okay, let's do it.
So the trailer for Netflix original series, or excuse me, movie Bright.
Oh, it is a movie. Released. It wasn't a series.
Yeah. Okay, it's a movie written by Max Landis, who wrote Green Valley, and it's directed by David Ayer. So that's, you know, pretty large names, starring Will Smith and Joel Edgerton.
Which he's from Breaking Bad, if I remember correctly.
Joel Edgerton, I believe so. He was also at oh my god, he's been in a bunch of stuff. He was in the MMA movie version of Fighter. There was Warrior.
Okay.
With Tom Hardy.
Okay.
Good
okay.
movie.
I'm going to believe.
But I did not recognize him in this role. So if you haven't seen the Bright trailer, Bright is a movie about Will Smith's character as a cop in L.A.
A human cop.
Yeah, I guess that's important. And he gets partnered with the first orc cop in L.A., and so, yeah, it's a fantasy world in modern times where orcs, fairies, elves all exist alongside of us. So, interesting allegory for race relations now. And the MacGuffin of the story seems to be a magic wand that looks super freaking cool, but...
Yeah. I've never heard anyone be that intense about saying the words magic wand. Like, they're all looking around and... Like, something like that, typically, you know, like, you're a wizard, Harry, here's your magic wand. And in this, they're like, they have a magic wand.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's nuts. Because, like, if you think about it, like, if there's only one magic wand in the world that can grant wishes...
That's a big deal.
That's a fucking big deal.
Right.
Like, you can just wish away the whole world if you wanted to.
True.
Yeah.
Yeah, you could wish that every person whose name begins with S is just no longer exists.
Mm, yeah,
I would do that.
Man, those S names. Wow. The story is, don't give Leander a magic wand, especially if your name starts with S.
Yes. Yes.
What do you guys think of the trailer overall?
I liked it. It definitely...
It was good, honestly.
And it said from those who made... what's the Suicide Squad?
Yeah.
And it had a Suicide Squad feel to it. To be honest, the orc reminded me of Killer Croc too much.
Oh.
That was a little interesting
to see that. But it was also from some of the people that did Arrival too, mm-hmm. which I don't know if you saw that, but mm-hmm. that movie
I heard it was incredible.
Yeah.
And it's like almost the opposite movie of Suicide Squad, like tonally.
So I think it's a good thing that they reference Suicide Squad and then visually we get that impression of Suicide Squad because it is truly, it's David Ayer's movie mm-hmm. and this is him without the studio interference. Mm-hmm. And I really feel like we would have gotten a much more interesting, darker film without studio interference and without the, there's a trailer company that had to recut the movie and that's why it's so spastic. Mm-hmm. So seeing something like Bright, which looks very straight ahead, mm-hmm. it actually, that's something that I find very interesting. I recently saw War for the Planet of the Apes.
Oh.
And straight ahead storytelling that's just very, very solid is extremely compelling. Like, it doesn't have to be deep in what the story is saying, but the way the characters' motivations are and how real everybody feels and how real the world feels can sell a movie. Because that's War for the Planet of the Apes is brilliant. So I think I get that same feel from Bright. I feel like it's it seems like a real world.
Nice.
Yeah, it does. It seems it's very grounded. It's not like it the almost has
fairy and elves.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, it has more of like I was watching it and it has more of a sci-fi feel rather than a fantasy feel because fantasy usually takes you out of this world and puts you in a different world, whereas sci-fi usually, like good sci-fi at least, will ground it almost even more like hard in this world than realism a lot of the times.
Fair enough.
And it has like a hyper realistic feel to it. Like we're talking, you know, getting a scene of just like a fairy making a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. Like I wouldn't be surprised like, if that's just like
some of the mundane with the fantastic. That was a big Incredibles thought is you have to combine that element. It has to be the monotony of every day with all of the fantastic elements, and that's when you start to relate to this crazy concept.
Yeah, and that's a huge thing in sci-fi especially having...
I think the part that grounded me the most with that, which is, this is funny, I guess, it makes no sense, but the part where Will Smith is in the trailer, Will Smith is interacting with the fairy outside of his house, and there's just a bunch of, like, black people outside, and it just felt like, oh, you're just in a black community with fairies.
That was great. Just a bunch of guys like sitting around on the front porch, like, you know, doing their hangout thing. And Will Smith is like swatting a fairy with a broom, next door.
Let's talk about
and they're all like the watching him.
The portrayal of the fairy too. It's not some high mystical creature. Right. It was eaten from the bird feeder.
Nuisance.
It wasn't actually some sort of.
It was pretty much like a hummingbird. Yeah, with a human body. Yeah.
And they've definitely made the comment that fairy lives don't matter. Right. Now.
They said that.
Yeah. So I don't know what that means.
Yeah, especially coming from you know Will Smith
mouth.
That's a very. You know,
in a setting where it was primarily people of color, that you make that comment against the fairy.
Yeah.
Like, what does that even mean?
That definitely being, like, the first scene of the trailer definitely, like, drew me in. I was like, I don't know how to feel about that. I'll see where this is going. Because we'll see what's happening here.
Can we talk that actually looked like a theatrical trailer? Like that movie doesn't look like something that you would be streaming at home.
Yeah,
right. That's very true. It's something you might see in the theater.
So
we'll see.
Well, then
Netflix is
upping
their games.
They have to. So like with. What was that movie about, like, child soldiers that they made a while ago? Mm. So, like, to be nominated for Oscars...
Oh, yeah, you have to show...
Has to be shown in theaters.
It's specifically theaters in New York and L.A.
Yeah, so. I didn't know that part, but... Mm. But, so, like, they do have a couple movies that they screen in theaters... just so that they can be nominated for awards. So I can totally see this being
one of those that they choose to. And it's, you know what, it's going to be interesting, counter programming, because it comes out right around the same time as Star Wars. Okay. So you can go spend your time out in the theaters, watch Star Wars, come home, be like, well, sweet, I'm going to get, you know, I got my sci-fi fantasy vibe from Star Wars, and come home and watch more sci-fi fantasy. So,
right, yeah. It's not really competition at all.
No, it's
because you're at home.
Yeah, it's there. I can pause it and go
that's
you know, grab
awesome.
Another beer.
I never thought about that. That's really cool. That, yeah, when Netflix shows or movies come out, it does not conflict with anything.
Nope. You set time aside to do it. Yeah. And it's like, okay, well, I got this, this, and this, and then I'm going to spend the next 8 hours binging what? Stranger Things, you know?
Yeah. you just pop it on your list, and then you come
there
back
you
to it, you know, when you get a minute.
Yep. So. Right. So, what was the other trailer we watched?
We watched the new trailer for Blade Runner 2049.
Yeah.
Can I pick it off?
I feel like we kind of talked about this a lot, like, a couple episodes ago already when the first trailer came out, but... I mean, I was sold. I was sold from the first trailer. They didn't even have to give me a second trailer. I was like, I'm already seeing this one opening night. And there was a lot of scenes that were repeated from the first trailer too. Mm-hmm. So I don't really feel like I got anything new out of it, which is good and bad for a trailer at the same time. You know, you don't want too much spoiled from all the trailers. But at the same time, it's like if they're gonna make another trailer, I kind of. It was pretty much like the same thing, just with like a couple different scenes.
See, I felt like they did a better job of building the entirety of the world that we see.
Oh, okay,
it's a bigger space, and start to see some character motivations and hinting at what maybe the plot has to do with the advancement of replicants as a species potentially. Mm. So I'm definitely on board, and I loved the trailer. I like the first one a lot, too. I'm more sold now on the Blade Runner sequel idea. Yeah, it was just really, like, it's good. It's one of those things where I sit down and I'm really just engrossed in the imagery of it.
Yeah.
And the seeing... They did a really interesting framing where there's... Batista's character is talking to Kay, Agent Kay from... I can't think of the actor's name all of a sudden. I just drew a blank. But then your new lead, and... They have a conversation and a fight, and then they cut to the guy making replicants, Jared Leto's character, and when they're passing over all of the replicants, you see Batista's form in, like, the replicant tubes.
Mm.
And it's like, whoa, okay, so you're telling us a little bit of... And his character looked kind of old and a little bit worn down, so what is it saying about where replicants have been and... How close are we societally to that? I don't know. The trailer gave me a lot.
Yeah.
Leander?
I felt dead inside.
Yeah.
I was like, let me just read a comic while you guys are watching that, because it's nothing to me. I don't know. I have no feelings for it. Also, there's this other element called Fifth Element that's causing me to have problems because anything that... remotely looks close and has any element of Fifth Element in the movie, I am dead to. Because I love Fifth Element so much, I want nothing else to even compare to that. So, like, Valerian is basically Fifth Element. I don't want to see it. I just have no desire to see it. Because Fifth Element was such a, like, outrageous, out-of-the-box movie for me that anything that even remotely has any elements of it. So, again, when I said, oh, it's just a bunch of sky caps from Fifth Element.
Right.
That's all I saw in the trailer.
That's what's really funny about this is Fifth Element would not exist without the original Blade Runner. And Valerian is from the same director of the Fifth Element.
Really?
Yeah,
that's true.
It's Luc Besson.
It's all connected.
So it's all connected.
It's all connected.
Yeah. Now, you should really check out the Blade Runner final cut and then see, be like,
okay,
Fifth Element's awesome. I think I might like this one better. It's like Dark Fifth Element.
There is room in your heart for both.
There's room. All right.
Two of the best science fiction films.
Oh, yeah.
Ever.
Okay.
Ever.
Oh, yeah.
All right. We'll see.
But yeah, I'm all in. I'm all in on Blade Runner 2049.
Nice. Yeah. Let's see here. There's a couple trailers that I saw, too. firstly, Pacific Rim Uprising trailer. So I was kind of sad when I heard that my boy Guillermo del Toro is not going to be doing it, although he's doing a different movie coming out this next year. Which looks amazing, because Guillermo del Toro is, like, the man. He grabs movies... like a bull by the horns. So yeah, it's apparently gonna be directed by the same director that's doing the Daredevil TV show. So it'll have a very different feel to it. It already did in, like, the very short trailer. Not a full theatrical trailer, but just, like, a 30-second, 45-second little, like, teaser trailer. So it'll be very interesting to see where they take this movie.
That trailer was a lot more, like, advertising anime, almost, in a sense. And I was talking, especially now you say that it was somebody involved with Daredevil Season 1, I'm more surprised because Daredevil Season 1 is such a gritty and, you know, intense piece of film work or TV work. That was much more fun, the Pacific Rim, Pacific Rim Uprising?
Yeah.
But yeah, the whole, like, seeing all the different Jaegers pop out, like, it was like Power Rangers, you know? Yeah. It was crazy. It was
really, yeah, really fun. Because it very much so was a teaser, like a commercial, basically. It was like, we have the new model of Jaeger coming out. Yeah. Pop on down to your local store and get one. So, want to take it for a test monster battle? Like, come on down.
I almost felt like there was a, because the trailer doesn't give you much, but I almost felt like maybe there was, like, robot wars, like, you were taking the Jaeger into, like, just street regular fights, you know? Like,
yeah.
Which would make it like Daredevil.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true, right?
Well, what would really make it like Daredevil is if there's a hallway fight.
That's one hell of a hallway.
That's just awesome. In an airplane hangar, that's it's running just
one walk straight through.
That's awesome.
And the other big trailer that I'm super excited for personally is Kingdom Hearts 3. So this game has been in the works. It's coming out, I believe, next year, and it's been in the works for it'll be 13 years.
That's ridiculous.
Since Kingdom Hearts 2. And the big thing was that Disney bought Pixar right after Kingdom Hearts 2. So this one is going to include all the Pixar movies. In the trailer, we got some Toy Story World. It's amazing.
No way.
There's going to be, like, Big Hero 6, Wreck-It Ralph.
I'm going to stop you there.
All the new ones.
Because I'm gonna pull the animation nerd on you. Wreck-It Ralph and Big Hero 6 are actually Disney proper. Those are not Pixar films.
Okay, that's true. But I was, yeah, so they're going to have all the new Disney ones, too.
Okay.
Like Big Hero 6 and Wreck-It Ralph and Brave and, like,
I missed the trailer. I should have watched it. I'm sorry.
Yeah. No, I mean,
we can watch it afterwards. I want to see it.
Yeah. It's really good. It's just, like, it has a cutscene and some gameplay, and if you've played Kingdom Hearts before, it just looks... There was a quote from, like, the guy who's, like, creating the new game right now, and he was like, I'm worried that it might be too big, was his concern. Yeah, and especially in, like, this day and age of video games.
With something like Breath of the Wild that exists.
Yeah, it's like, or, like, Skyrim and Fallout and, like, all these games. The fact that he thinks that it's too big to be immersive is, like... Like, there's gonna be, like, dozens of worlds, probably. Like, I can see there being, like, at least 20, like, huge open maps. Like, giant open map worlds.
My only concern is, based on what you've just said, though, my concern is that it's too kiddish. Like, Kingdom Hearts 1 was not kiddish at all. Like, I felt it was very gritty. And 2, I don't ever play 2. I don't remember. But the fact that they had, like, Final Fantasy element characters, like, that's a more grittier world than Goofy and Donald.
Well, they still have the Final Fantasy characters. Like, you know, Sora's... Actually, somebody is saying that Sora might not be the main character, but, like, there's still the villain still is, like, a Final Fantasy guy, and it still has that tone of, like, sort of...
Well, and the Heartless definitely
mellow, the
fall
Heartless.
Under, like, a Final Fantasy design more than Disney.
Yeah, and it still has, like, that tone of, like... Because, like, the trailer, it's going, like, it opens up with, like, a big boss battle, kind of. And then it just, like, stops, and the screen is black, and it gives us this quote that's, like...
I'm gonna watch it.
Okay, so, like, totally, it still feels like it has that, like, sort of melancholy,
All right.
like, like, there's definitely, like, the bright kiddish parts to it like, make it just a pleasure to play. And then there's, like, just enough, like, melancholy, very, like, down to, like, very philosophical feel to it. More like, why are Disney characters and Final Fantasy characters fighting? And who are we to be playing a game where Disney characters are fighting?
Go back to the intro of the original Kingdom Hearts.
Real? The music for the intro for number one is like, it changed my life.
I love that song.
The closer you are to the light, the longer your shadow becomes.
Yeah, Kingdom Hearts 1.
It just changed everything. It changed the rules.
Bought a PS2 just for Kingdom Hearts.
I might be in the same boat because I don't own a PS4. I might buy one just specifically for Kingdom Hearts.
I didn't think about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You guys can come watch me play.
And it's going to be one of those games that'll be fun to watch somebody play.
Yeah, it'll definitely be. We'll switching off controllers and stuff.
I'm not a good sharer, but yeah.
Maybe we'll make a podcast just for playing Kingdom Hearts.
That's true. We could do that.
Yeah.
For songs. Simple and Clean. That's the name of the original song.
I knew that on my somewhere in my life.
I love
it. It needs to be closer to me.
They haven't revealed the song yet, right? Because she's coming back to do
another
song for Kingdom Hearts 3 for the intro.
Oh, from the same artist that did
That's gonna be killer. Alright, I'm excited. Yeah. Alright, everyone go watch the trailer.
Yeah, we just got ourselves
a hype train. Alright, what's next?
So, we've been talking about Marvel's Legacy event several times here, and solicits have come out for the October books, and there are some missing titles. This comes from a Newsarama article called Legacy Lost, which is kind of cheeky. But I Am Groot, which makes sense. I Am Groot, I think, has a limited run miniseries, so it has an end date. Doctor Strange and the Sorcerer Supreme makes sense. It's probably a book that's running a little bit longer than I certainly had anticipated. I thought that was a miniseries, so makes sense for that one. Infamous Iron Man, which that's the title where Doctor Doom is the Iron Man. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people, I imagine, are going to be upset about that one. They really enjoyed the storytelling from customers that I've spoken with.
But I think that was pitched as a miniseries originally, too, if I'm
not mistaken. Yeah, so that's the thing, is a lot of these things seem to be stuff that was either originally going to be a miniseries or just something that lends itself to a smaller story anyway.
Right. Yeah.
And then Nick Fury, which nobody will miss.
Wow,
our curse
isn't. Like,
although, what issue is it on?
It's not 100 though.
No, it's like issue 4, maybe.
Okay,
so.
All right.
But that was one we didn't like, so it's fine.
Yeah, it was. That's why we were afraid that it would go on to issue 100.
But and then there are also titles that have been missing for 2 months of solicitations, and that's the Unstoppable Wasp. Original artist for the first 5 or 6 issues left the book. I think that may have been the kiss of death anyway, like that was saying that it was over. Ultimates Squared/Ultimates 2, don't know what you want to call that.
Yeah.
So I'd
call it canceled.
Call it canceled. I feel like there's a lot, from what you had talked about, that there's a lot that they can explore in different cosmic books. Like that would be a really interesting Guardians of the Galaxy crossover could really work with that.
Yeah.
And Captain America has not been solicited by Marvel for 2 months.
What?
So,
like Sam Wilson, Captain America?
No, Sam Wilson is the Falcon. He has his own comic book. Falcon number 1 will start as part of the Legacy.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Because so far he's been running the Captain America title.
Yeah, they've been two concurrent. You had Steve Rogers, Captain America, and then Sam Wilson, Captain America, two titles separately. He's now the Falcon because Captain America's name has been sullied being a Hydra agent. So he's gone back to being the Falcon. And then right now, Steve Rogers doesn't have a book. However, 52 of the supposed 53 titles is what has been revealed thus far. It would make sense to have Captain America be another book coming out of this, but maybe it's not until later in the year. Maybe the events will.
Maybe they have to unsully his name first.
Yeah, exactly.
He comes back as that.
I don't know. Go on an unworthy Captain America.
Right.
Yeah.
Miniseries.
It's a nice segue. Nice segue, because one of the other things that was solicited, because Legacy is going back to classic numbering, is the Mighty Thor 700. And holy shit, this cover's amazing.
Yeah, it's on the cover. Yeah. I have it here.
Oh, do you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's... Yeah, and it's a callback. The cover is the same as it was for the Marvel Now number one. And
oh, really?
It's like a full... not the same, but it's the full front and back spread that makes a one big picture.
Yeah, which was... Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. So we got all the Thors, although I'm just going to say there's no Cat Thor, so, you know, that was a little disappointing, but... Aww. You can have it.
But he could be in there somewhere.
He could be.
You can't see it between all the thunder.
That's true. Like, yeah. He's in there just playing with, you know, people's beard strings.
Well, what's great is in the solicits for this, it's written by Jason Aaron, who I'm not going to stop praising at this point in time because he's just amazing, with art by Russell Dowderman, Olivier Coipel, Walt Simonson, and I believe Chris Burnham. So that's... Oh, no, excuse me. Yes, Chris Burnham and James Herron, who... he's the artist on Rumble.
Mm.
He's fucking phenomenal. Like, a student of Mike Mignola and Walt Simonson. Like, he comes from the combination of even manga elements in his art. It is insane. To see him drawing a version of Thor... would be incredible. He has that, like, Conan... Well, the lead character in Rumble, if you've never read it, is very, like, Conan-esque. So you can see that translating to Thor very, very well. Yeah, I'm really excited for this.
You know what I find interesting about the cover for the Mighty Thor number 700? So it has all the different Thors, but honestly, Jane Foster Thor looks like the only real Thor on that entire spread. She just looks like the Thor. Like, I don't know. I mean, the other Thors, I'm sure, look like Thors, but she just really commands that whole entire... You can tell she is the lead.
Yeah.
Yeah. Know?
And she almost deserves it. She just looks amazing.
Yeah. She definitely has, like, the positioning on the cover to be... To, like, catch the eye. Like, the lines draw you to her specifically.
Oh, yeah.
And she's... Really, just looking at it, she's the only one that really has, like, the classic, like, chrome sort of, like, breastplate and helmet, which gives you, like, the feel like Odin's son is right there in front of her, but he's just wearing, like, a cape and a tank top.
Right.
Basically.
Yes. Yeah. He looks like he's straight out of Venice Beach.
Yeah.
and she's the only one wielding any real power. Like, her power's the one activated.
Yeah.
That might be the other reason why she looks the most like Thor of anyone on there.
Yeah.
Because her powers are activated. But I don't know. She looks amazing.
Well,
I know it says Legacy Begins the Death of the Mighty Thor, so.
Right. But what does that mean?
I don't know.
Because we're seeing, how many Thors are on that cover, and there's at least three active Thors in the current Marvel.
Yeah, but only one's mighty.
Fair enough.
That's true. Because you got the War Thor, the Unworthy Thor, and then the Mighty Thor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's true. I never thought of, like, separating them that way.
Yeah.
But that's true. Mm-hmm. Like, it certainly does have a Doctor Who feel, too.
Yeah.
Like, there's, like, all the different versions of the Thor, you know? Like,
yeah. So. 12 different Thors waiting for
we
the
We should
13.
Count, actually.
Yeah. Well, that's a good transition in and of itself, because that was a bit of news I wanted to bring up, is that they finally announced the new casting for Doctor Who now that Peter Capaldi is leaving. So Jodie Whittaker will be the new Doctor, which, of course, change stirs up anything on the internet, and since this is the first female Doctor in over 50 years... of the show.
Right.
You know, people love it, people hate it, there's nobody that's neutral on it.
Yeah.
It just can't happen.
That's so crazy.
With something like that.
But if it was just another dude, it would be whatever.
Yeah, people would
be boring.
Unless it was like, I don't know, like,
Well, here's my... Like so here's... Just answer a quick question. Yeah, so that was going to be my question. Has it always been just a white guy? Which is all I can picture in my head when I think about Doctor Who is just white guy.
Yeah.
He's never been any other variant. And why is that? Is it because, like, this is his son, and that's his son, and, Oh, they're all sons?
No. There's no reason that he's any shape or color or, like, has hair or doesn't have hair.
Capaldi made a very weird story point, and I don't know that they ever touched on it, but Capaldi played another character in an earlier season. Mm-hmm. So I have always theorized that maybe the faces that he chooses are faces that he, that I should say it, that it chooses are faces that it's seen before.
Hmm.
So, but
has it only seen white men? Like,
I mean, most of it takes place in England. So
oh, all right. So that's actually,
yeah.
Or at least when he's on Earth, I guess.
When is he not on Earth?
Doctor is a metamorphous space alien, and his blue box is a time travel dimensional spaceship.
Yeah.
So
it goes anywhere in time and space.
Yeah. What's the TARDIS stands for?
Time and relative dimension and space. There we go. Which it's an acronym that doesn't make sense.
No.
I don't know why they didn't give it a more eloquent acronym as it, if you're just gonna make up something like that.
Because his niece made it up in like the first series.
Oh.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, there you go. Well, yeah. If a niece makes it up.
Yeah.
There you go.
TARDIS is fine.
I don't understand why there's any controversy on this. If you really just look and think about it, there was no restrictions on the character.
Right.
Yeah. Why restrict the storytelling? And I think that's an important thing right now because people have been kind of stale on the recent stories. Why restrict the storytelling? Mm-hmm. Why? This is a bold statement that says we're not going to do that. We're going to tell different stories than what we've told before.
Yeah, and I think that's, and I think Doctor Who as a show has always, like, been driven forward when it is fresh, when it is new, when it gives the audience something that they've never seen before. Because a lot of times it can be pretty campy and pretty, like, you know, classic sci-fi tropes and stuff like that. But the real episodes that stand out are stuff that just completely blow away the genre entirely.
Yeah.
You know, I'm
thinking... Don't Blink.
Yeah, Don't Blink. Or the Van Gogh episode.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
my gosh. Know, like, just... its ability to use time and space, not in a way that's like, oh, look, we're with the Vikings now, but to be like, what are the Vikings going through in this time, and let's hang out with them for a bit and, like, see what's up with them. Like, what's going through their heads right now? They're not all just, like, pillage and plunder. They have families and friends back home that will... You know, like, what's going on in their love lives?
the other thing that's important with Doctor Who is that every time there's a new Doctor, it's, you know, purposefully different from the previous one. Mm-hmm. And then as an audience, you're kind of like, I'm not sure I'm into this. And then you fall in love with the Doctor.
Yeah.
So this just creates a different perspective of how that works. So
yeah. And sort of getting back to, like, what you were saying earlier, like, most of the time it doesn't really have a reason, but I do remember now that, like, Capaldi's Doctor, when he became it, he mentioned something about feeling old.
Yes.
And tired. And so he wanted a body that reflected that.
Yeah.
And so therefore...
Oh, yeah, so
Capaldi
maybe they can...
stepped in,
so... They can tie that into... the difference in his companions that he's had recently, and it's...
Yeah.
Strong female leads in his life, and he's just like, this is how I feel right now after being an old man. I need something fresh, and the energy they provided for me is where I need to go.
Yeah, it'll be interesting if they give it a reason, or they might not. They might just be like, boom, check now.
You're not a Doctor Who.
Correct. I know almost nothing.
Have you ever watched an episode
no.
of it?
Mm-hmm.
What has kept you away, just out of curiosity's sake?
I think the setting. And
it doesn't
resonate with me. And I can't... surprisingly, not enough has been told about it.
Okay.
I just feel like this... So my concept is that it's just this English dude running around getting into phone booths and doing stuff. So.
Okay. So it is a hard sci-fi show.
Yeah.
For you and those of you that don't know, he's going, you know, a million years in the future, a million years in the past.
Yeah,
to different planets. Yeah, he meets Queen Elizabeth X in one episode. Who's that was like one of the episodes that drew me in. It's, you know, England in space in like 10,000 years in the future.
Wow.
And she is funny because this is like based. It reminded me of a Louis C.K. joke, but she's black. She's fully black, and she's the direct descendant of the Queen of England, which is like, how would this ever happen? But it could.
It's possible.
In like 10,000 years.
It's already commoners marrying the princess, so, you know.
You need a couple generations to get out that, like, that heart of whiteness that is the royal family. Because that's a very hard white. That's like, you don't see that white very often. That's thousands of years of white change.
Yeah. I just pictured Bob Ross and... I'm going to grab some hard white and we'll paint that right here.
This is hard white.
And now maybe we'll add a little color to that. Yes, that's a nice little
just
color.
A little bit.
But I would say
Chappy Queen.
Check out Doctor Who. Start with the, oh my God, I can't think of the actors. Chris Eccleston season. So it's a series one of the current run. Okay. And while you're watching these episodes, keep in mind it is very British.
Mm-hmm.
And keep in mind that it's that first season series, whatever you want to call it, is more about setting the tone for the world and setting up some of the rules that you'll see. And less about giving you, like, a really great story and more about, okay, this is how the story is going to progress. Yeah. These are the rules I need to know.
Okay.
The rules of his spaceship, the rules of his sonic screwdriver, all his different little gadgets that he has. Okay.
What can happen if you mess with time and things start to loop.
Right. Okay.
But then, like, the real great episodes is when the second season of the new series starts and David Tennant becomes the new Doctor.
Right.
And that's when the episodes are just, like, really well-made, plot-driven.
Yeah.
The
Impossible Planet.
Yeah. Just...
there's some stuff in Doctor Who that's, like, it's nightmarish.
Yeah.
How it hits you.
Huh. Interesting. Yeah, I didn't know it was like that at all.
Yeah, it goes through all the different, like, possibilities of sci-fi. Like, there's some, like, you were saying that are just absolutely terrifying. Yep. Just, like, thing. And then there's other things where it's, like, let's have these cute little guys. Like, a planet of Furbies or something.
Yeah, you know, like, it's,
Furbies.
It's great though.
All right. I'll check it out.
Yeah.
So we have a woman now.
Yep.
And I should be upset.
Yeah. outrage.
Summary. That's okay. Exactly what
I'm supposed to be upset by. This. Yeah.
Girls. You females making up 50% of the population.
How dare you?
Less than, you know, almost only a quarter of actors and actresses in Hollywood. Grr.
Yeah.
And statistically, only about 22% of parliaments around the world. Grr.
That's okay.
Right.
Rant over. Next.
So, this one for me is a big one. I was just announced a couple days ago that Dan Harmon, the co-creator of the hit sci-fi TV show Rick and Morty, will be creating a Sirens of Titan television show, which is Kurt Vonnegut's first novel. And personally, I am a huge Kurt Vonnegut fan. They've tried to make movies out of all of his stuff before, Slaughterhouse-Five, Harrison Bergeron, like, all this stuff. It's never really had it, because Kurt Vonnegut is so much about the feel of it. He's like the cool uncle of sci-fi, basically. Like, H.G. Wells is like the dad. He, like, made all this, like, the genre, pretty much. He gave birth to the genre. But, you know, Kurt Vonnegut comes along every now and then and is, like, buying the genre, like, beer without its father knowing.
Right.
And, like, being really weird and, like, you know, doing all this stuff. He's, like, oh, man, it's great.
So, and what's, like, the name of the one that's coming out?
So this is The Sirens of Titan, which is based on his first novel, which was written in, like, I want to say 58 or 59.
Wow.
Possibly. So it's old. Like, he's just... And so, like, without giving it... Like, the premise is, how can we as a species come together and, like, be harmonious. And Kurt Vonnegut's thesis, basically, in it is, well, you need three things to do that. You need a common unifying philosophy, which is this religion that a guy just makes up.
Mm-hmm.
You need a...
Sounds right.
You need somebody to bring them to... Somebody to lead them, to lead this philosophy, and also to lead the people who stands above everybody else in certain ways.
Mm-hmm. Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or, like, a good guy. More like a Jesus. I wasn't going to say that.
Or like a good guy anyway.
Yeah, it could be a good guy. You never know. I know in this day and age that's like crazy to imagine. And then the third thing is you need a common enemy. So it's this guy, one guy basically, right, that makes all three of those things.
Gotcha.
He's like unstuck in space. Yeah. He's traveling through space. Hmm. He creates a religion because people are like, what's this guy like who's traveling through space? He's on Earth for, like, an hour every couple of years.
Huh.
And then he also creates this vast, pretty much, like false flag attack against Earth, just with, like, drone spaceships.
That's interesting.
To, like...
Unify everyone.
To get everybody together.
That's cool.
And the ending of the book is, like, classic Kurt Vonnegut. It's, like... Bill, it's like really great to read, and then the explanation of why it all happened is just so funny and trivial. It's like, hey, the whole Earth's history is just for to bring a coffee to someone or something like that.
Nice.
Basically, it's pretty much that trivial. Yeah. Like, oh, without spoiling it.
Right, sure.
It's like the human race has evolved just to make coffee.
That's awesome. what is there any network that this is supposed to be on?
So I haven't seen anything about networks yet. It's pretty much just announced that Dan Harmon wants to make it.
Mm. We keep talking about them, but Netflix needs to start something like this, because they have the money behind it to do hard sci-fi well.
Yeah.
I think that's... I hope wherever it goes that is, like, it's more premium network,
because
I...
Yeah. Because they, like I said, they've tried to make movies about it before, and it's not just, like, the amount of money behind it, but you need a creative liberty strong enough behind it to be able to give it that feel.
And a creative force. And Dan Harmon, I think, would be... That's a right choice. Somebody who really puts themselves into what they work on.
Yeah. So. Yeah, exactly. And, yeah. So I'm personally really excited about that.
Alright. We got another one to look at.
Mm-hmm. Cool. And then... another one, there's going to be a Doctor Doom movie.
That's weird. I have that on my notes as well.
Yeah.
So
it's going to be Sony Pictures.
I thought it was Fox.
Is it Fox? I could have sworn it was Sony.
Because I think it's the same license as Fantastic Four, right?
Is it?
Yeah, because he's one of the... He's been the villain in every Fantastic Four
reboot. It makes me cry. If it's Fox, I'm going to cry.
Okay. So
I was almost happy about this news, and now I'm not.
I have a really interesting perspective on this. Well, what were you thinking?
Sorry. Okay, I was just going to say that the only real, like, things I saw about it so far is that there is going to be one, and that it's going to be created by Noah Hawley. I'm sorry if I'm mispronouncing that. Noah, you can come on and tell me how to pronounce that properly. Who was the showrunner for FX's Legion.
Yep.
Which was an amazing show.
Yeah.
Absolutely amazing. So I'm really interested to see where this guy takes such a classic take-over-the-world kind of character. Like, you know, make an army of evil robots to take over the world, as opposed to Legion, where it's like, let's take over the world using psychedelics.
Basically. I smell an intercompany deal from this. This smells a lot like Spider-Man to me, where Sony is making a Venom movie, and they're making all of these, you know, like, Silver and Black. They're making these villain movies. And now Fox is making the Fantastic Four villain movie. Are we about to hear the announcement that Fox and Marvel Studios are co-producing a new Fantastic Four under the Marvel Cinematic Universe banner? And the caveat is The caveat is that they don't get to use Dr. Doom. You negotiate that back and forth where you take this character. I would be fine with not having Dr. Doom be in a Fantastic Four movie. They basically fucked him up twice.
Yes.
I think I saw something a while ago, though, that was one of the Marvel Cinematic execs that was saying that they're not even going to do Fantastic Four.
They would never tell us. That's the thing. It's like,
but they love teasing us. Is the
but they
thing.
Also love.
But we never thought we would get Spider-Man.
Yeah, that they like dropping bombs on us.
That's true, I guess. But there's so many.
San Diego Comic-Con is happening right now. They announced Doctor Doom, and then at the Marvel panel, they go, "Oh, and by the way, we've got a new film to announce." And they just screen goes black, and all you just see is Fantastic Four, and it says Fox and Marvel Studios. The crowd will lose their shit at this point.
Yeah.
I think it's possible.
Fantastic Four is a huge property. Like,
it's the birth of the Marvel Universe.
I love Fantastic Four. Like, I am in love with it. I am beyond in love with Fantastic Four. It hasn't been good in a while, but there's been some really great runs. And actually, one of my favorites is The Heroes Reborn.
Yes!
That was my favorite Fantastic. And the art was amazing. Yeah. It was gorgeous.
Heroes Reborn and then Heroes Return when they came back. The stories were great.
Yep. They were on it.
The run where Johnny is the Herald of Galactus.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
There's so much. Back to the original news, that Doctor Doom movie, I'm kind of excited.
I'm just like, get it out of my face.
But they seem to have you on the right track with the X-Men stuff, too, so maybe there's...
They got lucky with
Logan, the right movie.
Yeah. We'll see.
Yeah. I don't know how you tell, if you're going to do a Doom origin, how you would tell it without the Fantastic Four.
Right.
But then again, we had that discussion about how do you do a Venom movie without Peter Parker.
That's true. So we're going to see.
We'll see what happens. It does feel, though, like that's very similar to how they're doing it. The big baddie, you make that negotiation where it's like, fine, you can have Doom. We will do a Fantastic Four movie that's not related to the character. We'll just do a different one. We'll start in a different place. The Baxter or the Avengers Tower in Spider-Man Homecoming was being moved out of. They were moving everything out of that. Who is going to occupy that space? It has to be somebody huge. It can make it the Baxter Building.
Easily.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I'm like going crazy speculative and like in my own happy place, but I don't know.
Yeah.
It's a weird piece of news.
My problem is I want a Doctor Doom. That is amazing. I mean, he's such a great character, but if they could nail him in a Fantastic Four movie. But at the same time, I'm fine with moving on.
Yeah.
I don't need Doctor Doom.
Would it be interesting to do just like a space adventure? Like where you take the whole family and they go exploring in space?
Yeah, that's the other thing. They could easily, they could change it right away by throwing in Franklin and Valeria.
Yeah.
Then that would change everything. Then I'm like, oh, this is game changer. Game changer, Marvel, not the same.
MCU has not announced what Phase 4 is.
Mm-hmm.
But what is going to bring them into this new... Because they're going to start losing some of the characters that they have. You can't keep Downey...
I have a theory about that.
Do you?
Yeah, because I don't think they're going to do a Secret Wars. Mm-hmm. I think they're going to have the Avengers Infinity War be the cinematic Secret Wars, pretty much. Mm-hmm. That's what I think.
Okay.
Like, they're going to go through this big two-part... $500 billion million?
It's like the largest
budget
ever. They have the money.
Yeah.
I was reading something a couple days. I want to say $500 million.
Sounds about right. I mean, that's a lot of money.
Yeah. It's the biggest budget to ever go into a movie ever, basically.
Because for a while.
So they're going to all come together. Have a huge fight against Thanos. He's going to kill off a couple of the actors whose contracts are ending.
Right.
For sure. And then...
Which is fair.
Then we'll see... Hopefully between the time that Infinity Wars 1 and 2 happens, I think they're going to throw in a bunch of these legacy characters into some new movies.
We should talk about that too. So initially when Infinity War was announced, it was part 1 and 2. That is not the case. It is Infinity War and an untitled Avengers 4.
Okay.
So they're basically being filmed back to back, but there's no specific correlation. A lot of rumors are saying that it's Avengers Disassembled. So it'll be the complete breakdown of that Avengers group, and something else will have to be born from that.
Yeah.
Which makes sense. I mean, that's the way to do it if you're going to jump into a new phase, because Spider-Man 2 is supposed to basically occur, like, minutes or days after what Avengers 4 is.
Oh, really?
So, Spider-Man's going to be a key component, Black Panther's going to be a key component, and Doctor Strange will be key components in this next phase of... Mm.
But yeah, I don't think Robert Downey Jr. is going to make it past the fourth movie.
I don't think so. I don't think you need him to. I think he did such a great job establishing this.
He definitely served his part.
Yeah. He nailed it.
Yeah. And especially now, they can definitely throw Riri in there.
Yeah. Keep Robert Downey as the AI.
Yeah, just the voice, basically.
Yep.
Yeah, they can just Skype film him.
Actually, that would work. Actually, just
that would totally work.
Yeah, that would completely work.
Which I love that subplot. By the way, I really hope they throw that in there.
That's really cool.
Just
having him as an AI.
Man, what a good job that the Marvel Cinematic Universe does. That like something like this is such a passionate piece of like conversation that you're like, no, these are the things that should happen.
We've never had. They've been building up to this thing. We've never seen crossovers this big before.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Really. Like, they've done crossover movies in the past, yes. And, like, but, like, to this scale that they've built up with, like, two Avengers movies, multiple solo films for the characters in that movie, you got two Guardians of the Galaxies movies, they're gonna come together, and all this thing. There's been, like, at least 10 or 12 films leading up to this one film. Like, and 10 or 12 box office hit films.
Right. Yeah. And as comic book readers, we know what's to come, you know? We see this stuff all the time, these giant epic scales, so.
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah.
Alright.
All right.
So, maybe we should do some comic reviews. We can grab one each.
Mm-hmm.
Alright. Who wants to start?
I'll start it up.
Alright.
Okay. Alright, so,
a second.
I've got Aliens Dead Orbit number 3. This is from Dark Horse Comics. It is written, it's art and lettering by James Stocco. This centers around a character called Wasi. He's like an engineer on a space station for, I think they only refer to it as the company. The assumption is that it's Weyland-Yutani. And this is a tour de force, terrifying, oh my god, what the hell is happening, alien story. He wakes up in the beginning of this issue, and he's wrapped in like the goopy, tenderly stuff that the xenomorphs tend to wrap people in. And it's told through flashback as he's waking up and remembering what has gotten him there, and watching the other characters get picked off and wrapped up. This has been a really amazing, creepy series. The pacing is wonderful. It feels like the best part of the Aliens franchise. Nobody's grabbed any machine guns, so it's not like Aliens yet, okay. But this is definitely more akin to the isolated, stucked-in
survival.
World surviving. And
what about a machine gun attached to a flamethrower?
Oh, not yet, but I want to see it. I want to see somebody stand up to one of the xenomorphs. I don't think it's going to happen.
Right now, they're all scared.
Yeah, right now, I think everybody's going to die.
Yeah.
Like, it's got that feeling of there is no hope in this scenario. And it's really interesting, the character relationships, because one guy freaks, just completely loses his shit watching somebody getting grabbed. I've cursed a lot today. I'm sorry.
that's usually my job. God damn it.
I'm really passionate about this stuff, man. But James Stocco's art people are ugly, but everything is beautiful. I don't know if that makes sense.
Okay.
It's one of those things you just need to look at yourself. There's a lot of manga influence, a lot of speed lines. Mm-hmm. Just a really, like, it's an intense, wonderful story. Go and pick it up. It's awesome.
What's it called?
Aliens Dead Orbit. Okay. This is issue number 3.
Nice. All right. I will do Astonishing X-Men number 1 with Bishop.
Sorry.
Featuring Bishop.
Featuring Bishop. First of all, I think this book is going to be awesome. Yeah. I think it's going to be awesome. I thought there's too many characters. As it was started off, I was like, this is too many X-Men. Stop. Right. I think 3 or 4. There's like 7 or 8. And I'm like, okay. And then, the premise is that basically it seems like there's an attack on psychics, right? That's just kind of the premise. And then you find out, bam, bam, our big boy, the Shadow King, is back on the scene. You're like, oh my gosh. Psylocke's the first one to get attacked in this situation, and she just randomly calls out to as many X-Men as she can, and she did. She, like, every X-Men she could find. And so, like, they all showed up, and some of them weren't even called. They just happened to be in the vicinity of the other X-Man that was called.
Phantom X.
Yes. And Wolverine, Old Man Logan,
was not
called. Old Man Logan was not called. And so you find this issue out, and it's really, I love the way they introduce all the characters. It's very subtle. It's not too, it wasn't enough time to give you this huge backstory for each character. Like, oh, if you're new to this world, here's this person and what they're all, no, ain't got time for that. Some people are having coffee. Some people are reading books in libraries. Some people are stealing things from museums. And now they're all here.
Yep.
The ending, crazy. I didn't even...
Yeah!
At first, I wasn't even sure. I actually disbelieved myself. I'm like, oh, who's this monk?
Awesome.
Because I didn't want to believe who it was.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to spoil it anything beyond that it could be a monk. And so I think it's a great cast of characters. I don't know what happened to Rogue and Uncanny Avengers. It definitely feels like she left or she got kicked out or something serious happened.
Yeah.
Because it feels like she's internalizing some issue that must have happened.
Yeah.
And she's just been... And she looks like the same kind of Rogue costume from Uncanny Avengers.
Yeah.
So something's going on. That was pretty recent. Anyways, I'm excited. Gambit, Rogue, Angel, Psylocke... Any type of sexual attention is going to be there.
Yeah.
Be prepared.
I think this is the classic, like, instance of grab the book off the shelves,
mm-hmm.
read it, enjoy it, and then say, oh, I want to deep dive in the well and figure out who these people are and then go from there.
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's right. This is great. Definitely a book that would probably make someone a collectible person.
Yeah.
A collective person. Yep. I'm like, oh, I think I might want to go back and find out more about these characters.
Mm-hmm.
I don't feel that way about almost any of the other stuff that I've read recently. So that's my review. Go pick up Astonishing X-Men number one.
Nice. Sounds good. So for mine, I'm going to do Jeff Lemire's Royal City number 5. And this is one I mentioned a couple times previously on the show. But this book is just... And this is wrapping up the first story arc, so we'll get the first volume here soon of it. You can pick it up in that. And this story really brings together... both the plot and the themes, I would say, of this whole thing. So, it's a small town, people are going around, like, the dad of this family has had a stroke and he's in the hospital, and so it starts off with the dad dying, basically. And his youngest son, Tommy, who died years and years and years ago, is there and picks up his dad's ghost, and they go and see the family as they're going now. So before I can tell if it was like hallucinations or whatever, but it's more of magical realism really, because we have the family and they're just chilling in all the different parts of the town, having just regular conversations with the ghosts of their dead little brother. And then they're going through all their stuff and doing it, and then there's one scene towards the end where we get this picture of Tommy and all these different forms that he's taken, because since he died as like a teen, like a young teen, maybe 10-year-old, and he drowned, and so like to his mother and his brother and his brothers and sister, he has a different appearance. And I didn't really get this before because he kept appearing to him, but like to his mom, he's a priest now. Like, all these different possibilities of what he could have become.
Right.
And to his older brother, he's kind of like this, you know, blue-collar steel mill worker guy, because he's that. And to his brother, who's a writer, he's more of like this hipster, punk kind of looking guy. And, like, to one of his sisters, he's still like the little brother that she always had. And so, just like... Oh man, just right in the heartstrings and the feels, and the art is just beautiful and brings it all together. And Yeah, and then the dad comes back for a bit. So he just dies for just a little bit.
Oh, just a little bit of death.
Yeah, just a little bit of death. And then also crazy reveal in the end, too, if that all wasn't enough for you. There's still, like, still just family drama on family drama.
Okay. Yeah, you need family drama.
Yeah, and so great slice of life, great... great, like, fantastic elements to it. Go pick up Jeff Lemire's Royal City. That's all I have to say about it.
Nice. All right. Well, I think that wraps up issue number 6 of Capes and Scouts. Wes?
Before we sign off, just want to say a thank you to Griffin Games and Comics here in Fort Collins, Colorado, for helping us with the microphone and providing a space for us to record.
That's so true.
Thanks, Griffin.
Yay, Griffin.
All right.
All right.
Bye.